Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. I'm Kurt Heelan, managing editor of the NBA page at NBC Sports, leading you as always. And today, hey, we're going to be breaking down the NBA draft from Zion Williamson all the way through Vanja Marinković, I believe it's pronounced, the 6'6 wing out of Serbia who the Kings took with the final pick in the draft. Guy probably won't see the NBA, but we don't know if we'll get that far, but we're going to talk about all of it with Dan Feldman from NBC Sports. Just a reminder, first, go into Apple Podcasts or Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, and give us a rating. Tell us what you think. Leave a comment. We'd greatly appreciate it. And subscribe, please. Beyond that, let's just dive right into it. And to do that, we welcome in Dan Feldman from NBC Sports. How you doing, Dan?
Good. How are you?
Good. It was an interesting draft. I think outside of the obvious themes of, hey, you know, they got Zion Williamson in New Orleans. That's huge for them. I think the other thing that really stood out to me was just kind of how all over the map this draft was, in the sense that teams, I mean, you do a post every day, every year, right before the draft. You did it this year on the tiers.
Thank God I don't do it every day.
Yeah, exactly. But before the draft every year on the tiers, right, the teams are looking at, and how you kind of break that down. And usually I want to say that there's a vague consensus. Obviously some guys are going to be different on different boards, but there's a vague consensus. There didn't seem to be this year. What you thought of Rui Hachimura could vary all over the map. And same with a lot of guys who were taken anytime after about 9 or 10. It went everywhere.
I think this is a consequence of this being, quote-unquote, a weak draft. Now, I do want to address a little bit this idea of a weak draft. I think we are so bad as talent assessors, as anybody who's looking at this, of figuring out, is this a weak draft or a strong draft, especially predicting a weak draft. I think a little bit better at saying this is going to be a strong draft, but by no means good at it. It is so hard to predict in the moment. But what I do think we can say right now is that this is a draft very short on players you feel good about. Some of them might emerge and put it together, and teams absolutely need to do their homework and decide who's the best bet, who do you want to, you know, put your backing behind, and you get credit if he pans out, but even better than you expect. There just aren't many players. Maybe after, I think there was a drop after the top 9 or so, and then maybe another drop after the top 15 or so, and maybe that's even too high, of players you feel good about what they're going to become. And when nobody feels good about what the players are going to become, it leads to a lot of differing opinions, and some teams liking one guy over another, and I think that led to some of the what happened last night. Although I will say, I'm trying to remember what draft it was a few years ago. This is not the most unpredictable draft I can remember. I feel like there was one a few years ago that was even more so like that.
There is certainly some of that, but I think it starts, honestly, you go all the way up to number 4, which the Atlanta Hawks wanted to trade up into. They, you know, it was the Lakers pick to the Pelicans in the Anthony Davis trade. They move it on to Atlanta. They took DeAndre Hunter there, who he's someone I'm kind of high on as a high floor guy, right? Like, he can defend, he can hit threes, he should be a solid NBA pro, if not an all-star. But it becomes an interesting, like, is he a number 4 pick? Are you better off? I mean, Darius Garland goes at 5, and I kind of liked the Cavs night for this. They took, with Kevin Porter Jr. at 30, with Darius Garland at 5, they rolled the dice on higher upside guys, right? Like, and I kind of like that in this draft, but I think it was interesting that the Hawks, now granted, I think there's a fit thing there, right? if you've got Trae Young and you've got John Collins and you've got Kevin Huerter, then it makes some sense to put in a good defensive wing, but there wasn't some great upside guy.
Not as sold on DeAndre Hunter's high floor as most others. I do think his floor is reasonably high, or it looks reasonably high. But again, I'm going to keep hitting on how bad we are at evaluating these things as a group. Whenever I hear somebody say, oh, he's going to stick 10 years in the league, I just kind of roll my eyes. You know who's going to stick 10 years in the league? Zion Williamson, because he's so good. Like, that's who sticks 10 years in the league, the very best players. When you get down in the draft and start trying to predict who's going to be a role player for a long time, man, that fails a ton. The player I remember hearing that the most about was Thomas Robinson, who didn't come close to sticking 10 years in the league because he wasn't good enough. Like, you can't carve out a role if you're just not good enough. And DeAndre Hunter, I do think there are some flaws that could interrupt him being a good role player. I don't project him as a lockdown defender. I think his strength is his versatility, but that works. You have to be a smart defender, and I think he'll get there. I think he's a pretty smart defender, but defense is so much about intelligence, like, and that's a tough thing to predict. There were a lot of people who thought Willie Cauley-Stein was going to be this elite defender, and it didn't turn out that way, even though he had a lot of the tools. RJ Hunter, is he going to be able to do enough offensively? His three-point shot, I'm not sure if it's going to expand out to NBA range, and with him being able to get it off quickly enough. There are some flaws here that could sink him. I had him lower, and to me, this is part of the reason I really like that trade for the Pelicans and not so much for the Hawks, in that this is so unpredictable, I'd rather have, in general, multiple swings. And in this draft, I don't think the Hawks moved up like in a meaningful way to get somebody way better than they could have gotten by staying at 8. I do think they got somebody who fits much better. I love DeAndre Hunter's fit on that team with Trae Young and John Collins, and he can work in between them. He can complement Kevin Huerter, more of the defending role player, Huerter more of the scorer on the wings. And Cam Reddish, another player I think fits very well and with good value there. But I just think, in general, you shouldn't be worrying too much about fit in the draft, because finding the good players is hard enough already.
I'll agree with you there. In the sense that it is just hard to predict exactly where it is and how guys are going to shake out, because what it becomes about is the work ethic. And once you get, I think, I like R.J. Barrett, but there was, I think, a clear line at 4 where there's a drop down out of those top 3, and you had Barrett lower than that. But I think even with Barrett, and certainly this is true of Zion Williamson at 1. I just think he's got the talent to get past this. There's so many questions about how much work they're going to put in. Basically, the NBA becomes about how well you can fill in your weaknesses, right? Like, how well can you? Hey, I'm not a good shooter. How can I become a good shooter, or at least a respectable one?
It can be, but I also think, you know, sometimes it can be about how you maximize your strengths. Yes, you're absolutely right, though, about work ethic and that being so important. I do think one of the best indicators we have of predicting work ethic is how good are you now. Like, I'm not a huge believer. I mean, some people absolutely have more natural tools in terms of physically. But in terms of being a good basketball player, it takes a lot of work already just to get to this point. And so that is a real inspiring thing when somebody is a better player already. You know, that doesn't mean everything, far, far from it, but it is a good indicator toward the work ethic. You brought up Garland, you brought up the Cavs a couple times. I'd like to jump back to them. I saw your winners and losers, and I liked at the beginning how you kind of chafed at the idea of doing winners and losers
the night of the draft.
After the draft.
Yeah, it's kind of a pointless exercise. It really is. But anyway.
I agree, right? If you want to read what we think of the prospects, you know, you had that tracker. You put what you thought of the players. I did it with the tiers before. Like, nothing has changed since the picks have come in. And you know, we don't know who's going to be good. But I do think, in a certain way, you can look at the Cavaliers as a loser. Because, at least in terms of the Garland pick, because I love that pick. That's absolutely the pick I would have made. The sense of a loser is it worked out that the best player available is somebody who plays the same position
yep.
as the guy they were building around, Colin Sexton. And I think you absolutely pick Garland. I would not pass on Garland because I have Colin Sexton. I don't think Colin – I would almost never do that anyway in a vaguer sense, but I just don't think Colin Sexton's good enough to even think about deviating from that. But it's something they're going to have to work out now. It's not an ideal combination. I know they're trying to spin it as the next Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. Nah, it's not.
Yeah.
Those players don't fit as well together, I don't think. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I don't think they fit as well together. Now that is something the Cavs have to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. Are there picks farther down that you kind of like? I'll throw one out. I do like Kobe White. I'm a little higher on him than some teams. And the Bulls were the one of two teams in this draft absolutely desperate for a point guard. Phoenix traded out. They're trying to get a veteran point guard in. But I'm high on Kobe White, and I think he's a guy who can, if he can learn to be the playmaker, I think, and again, it's filling in the weaknesses. If he can be the playmaker he needs to be, you know, look, they've got Lauri Markkanen, they've got Zach LaVine out on the wing. Like, they've got some players there, and if this guy can be the glue and the point guard, you're starting to put something together. So I kind of like that pick, even though I didn't have him in winners because I'm just not totally sold. I've got a lot of questions about Kobe.
I like Kobe White, too. I like that pick a lot. I think it was good value and a good fit. He's interesting to me because I think it's so tricky to figure out what type of guard you pair him with in the backcourt.
Yeah.
Because Kobe White is so good in transition. Like, I want him to be my transition point guard, basically, and my half-court shooting guard because he's a good spot-up shooter, but not there as a playmaker. Like you said, his pull-up jumper needs work, but a good spot-up jump shooter, three-point shooter. And so he can work off the ball. He can come around screens, and you know, maybe he'll develop as a point guard in the long term. I think Zach LaVine is a good stylistic fit. I'm not sure Zach LaVine is a good enough player, but stylistically, I think that's a good fit. And so, yeah, I like that pick, too.
The first pick that really had people turning their heads and kind of like, really? Was Cameron Johnson to the Suns at 11, a guy that most teams had in the 20s. Look, a really good shooter, 6'9 forward, who is... can just flat out knock it down, and that's about it. Did that one catch you off guard?
It sure did. So much so that I immediately was like, oh, shoot, I forgot to put Cameron Johnson on my draft board. Like, I looked at him, and I meant to put him in the late 20s, and so I had to go back and put him in precisely where it was. I think it was 27. That was just a mistake beforehand omitting him that I missed. I shouldn't have missed it. But I didn't notice it because Cameron Johnson is not a prospect. You're like, oh, man, I went through this. I reviewed this. Was anybody missing? Like, Cam, I wasn't like, oh, shoot, how could I have forgotten about Cameron Johnson? Like, he's so good. It was, I would say the Suns, maybe this will all work out. Maybe they are geniuses. Maybe they're ahead of everybody else. But they look like a team with a rookie general manager.
Yep, absolutely, who fell in love with this guy. And again, I it's hard for me to say it's a disaster to take shooting, but... Man, I think you could have traded down and gotten that guy, you know, easily.
Well,
much
they
later.
Did.
They did, and still.
I love that. I don't know if this is Woj just telling a fun story or him trying to show something about the Suns or what. But man, when you found out the Suns executive Jeff Bauer was recruiting Cameron Johnson to Marist. My first thought was, wait, did I read that wrong? Was it Cameron Johnson's dad or something? Like, how long ago was Jeff Bauer the coach at Marist? That was ages ago. Oh, shoot. Yeah, that's right. Cameron Johnson's pretty darn old. He's a fifth-year senior. That's part of the knock on him.
Yeah. And then it gets into, I think, at this point, when you get into the teens, I'll throw out one I like, and then I'm higher on Romeo Langford than a lot of people. I think that injuries impacted him, and he'll be a better pro than he necessarily was at Indiana with everything on his shoulders. And so I kind of like that for Boston, but I'm that's what eyes wide open, you know, I could be very wrong there type of pick. What do you like kind of in the middle of this first round where you thought, hey, that was a nice pickup?
I really liked Sekou Doumbouya for the Pistons, a real talented player, live athlete. He's raw. I'm not sure what he's going to turn into. Like, it might not go great, but to get a bet like that at 15, I thought was just outstanding for Detroit.
Yeah. The other team obviously we've got to talk about New Orleans, and I don't know how much time we really need to spend on, hey, Zion could be really good. Like, look, they win the draft in the sense that if Zion Williamson is what people believe he can be, if he can be that franchise cornerstone, top five NBA player type of guy, and he has the tools, if he can develop into being that guy, if the shot comes along and is smoother, if everything else comes along, then you know what? You win. Those are the guys you can build a champion around and maybe even salvage. Let's be honest. I mean, salvage New Orleans basketball in New Orleans, because that is not a basketball town. That is not a big market. That is not a city with a lot of Fortune 500 companies that buy luxury suites and expensive seats. Like, it's not easy to run that team there. But Zion might be able to flip that. The excitement around Zion might be able to change things. We'll see. But they obviously traded down from 4, and you get to number 8, Jackson Hayes, a project center, a guy with a lot of talent, but a kind of a project guy who needs a lot of work, and is even at his best seems like a poor man's DeAndre Jordan type of guy. And then at 17, Nickeil Alexander-Walker out of Virginia Tech. Did you like those picks?
I liked Alexander Walker. I did not like Jackson Hayes. I thought Hayes was a little too high and not a great fit with Zion. I mean, Hayes doesn't shoot jumpers. He doesn't pass. Like, he just doesn't have those kinds of skills. You want that rim area clear for Zion, I think. Nickeil Alexander Walker, I like him. I just think that's good value there. He's a savvy player. I'm not sure if he can become a point guard in the NBA. I think that's best case scenario. I think you get the ball in somebody's hands if they're more valuable. If he has to be a combo guard or even an off guard, he has skills for that too. So I thought collectively those picks were fine. I really like just basically moving down from 4. I thought that was, to get those extra picks, those extra swings, was the real good move for New Orleans.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I'm with you. The thing about Hayes that confuses me, I mean, because I kind of like him in some settings and a team that can develop. And by the way, I think that's the other thing that we haven't touched on in this draft. I kept putting this later. Utah kept taking guys, you know, in the second round, and I'd be like, yeah, he needs to develop X, Y, and Z, and he's got to get better here, where, and there, you know, with this, that, and the other thing. Oh, and by the way, he went to Utah. They're really good at developing guys. Like, same with, like, you know, San Antonio. I think that every team now knows they've got to be better at developing players and bringing them along, except maybe the Lakers. You've got to be able to develop and bring along. And I guess they kind of did it. I mean, you know, say what you will about Ball and Ingram. Those guys got better, so you've got to be able to develop young players to succeed in the NBA. How good you are at that and how good you are at spotting talent that you can develop along is really going to be one of the tests of this draft, right? Like, which teams are going to be able to help put these guys in situations to bring them along and you know, like you said, either maximize the strengths or improve their flaws or both, really.
So along those lines, that's actually a question I wanted to ask you. So we always evaluate the draft, for the most part, from a team perspective. Who is a player who you think really benefited from where they went? The player has to have the ability to take advantage of the environment, but where, yes, this will be a good fit for that player. They can really put him in position to succeed, help him grow, and where, yeah, the player should feel like, yeah, like, this is where I want to be. This worked out well for me.
I mentioned Langford, who I'm kind of high on, and I think Boston is a good spot for that kind of thing. But I'll throw two more at you, came a little bit later. At 19, the Spurs take Luka Šamanić out of Croatia. Kind of he had a really good combine, high IQ player, raw, but a project big. Those are the kind of guys that other teams fail with, and the Spurs nail. Like, we don't hear from him for 2 or 3 years, and suddenly we're like, he's playing regular minutes. You're like, where did this guy come from? I got a feeling he could be one of those guys. Like, he's got some raw talent. He's got the size. I like that fit there. The other one, just in terms of fit, I think Matisse Thybulle going to the 76ers, where he can be a wing defender off the bench at the start and get some minutes and develop into a guy who can, I mean, he's a really good wing defender and a guy out on the West Coast that I saw a little more of, just because out here I get to see a little more Pac-10 basketball at night sometimes. He got steals. He can block shots. He does well on ball for a guard. He can shoot the ball. He didn't seek his own shot. He's got to work on that a little bit and just be more consistent on that end. But I think that's a good spot where that pressure to do it off the top, heavy minutes, isn't there. And over the course of the season, he can give them, you know, in a sense, a poor man's what Robert Covington did, and maybe he can develop into that kind of role for them.
So two of the that stood out to me were both to the Cavs. I think Darius Garland will be an excellent fit in John Beilein's system. Now, it's complicated by Colin Sexton's presence, and I think Dylan Windler is just, like, can fit right into what Beilein wants to do. I think when there were the initial reports that they were taking Keldon Johnson, I was like, ugh. And then to turn that into Dylan Windler instead, like, there's no guarantee that that was based on, like, what John Beilein wanted or that he pushed for that or anything. Like, I'm not saying that, but, man, I have to believe that Beilein was happy with that development.
Yeah, I would agree. You know what's another guy, when we were talking about guys who are all over the map on different teams, what do you think of Brandon Clark? He ends up with the Memphis Grizzlies, kind of a defensive guy, but scored efficiently last year. High motor. I honestly was surprised he got picked behind Hachimura from Gonzaga. I always kind of liked Clark a little better, but what do you think?
Yeah, I was surprised by that too. I can't remember if we talked about this or if you said it somewhere like very early in the process. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought you said that you expected Rui to get drafted ahead of Clark, and I was a little surprised. So I'm interested that you came around to that. I like Clark a lot. Maybe we just shifted places because I wasn't totally shocked Rui went higher. I got the sense that could happen, but I like Clark much more. He has got real fun. He's, like, not long. He's not tall enough, but he plays hard. He's so bouncy. He's so quick off the floor. He's unselfish. I really like him and Jaren Jackson as a big man pairing in Memphis with Clark inside, Jackson outside. Offensively, defensively, I'm not sure who's guarding opposing centers. Maybe Jaren Jackson can grow into that, get stronger, and fill
out. He's got to.
He's younger, but in the short term, I'm not sure who doesn't. I don't think either one of them is going to enjoy trying to do it.
Yeah. Nasir Little is a guy who just fell and fell and fell, and, you know, his stop had dropped over the course of this college season, but this is a guy with a lot of talent, and I kind of like that fit with the Blazers. I, you know, Jay Billis was, I muted him. I was so tired of him kind of hyping this pickup because I'm not as high on Nasir Little as he was. But all the way down to 25 on a team that could use a wing, you know, that's not a bad pick.
Yeah, I almost said him in my answer to my question of a player who landed in a good spot for him, although way lower than he wanted to be. I was shocked that the NBA was so much lower on Nasir Little than I was.
Where did you have him?
I was pretty low on him.
Where'd you have him?
I had him. See, I got to scroll all the way down for the made picks now. I'm not a... I had him 15. I thought I was pretty low on him. I thought, you know, there's an upside. He plays hard. Like, he could figure some things out. I saw some path, but I also saw him as a project. And in this draft, a project with decent upside, to me, that was about 15. I know a lot of people had him higher, and I think a lot of people viewed him as more of a good player, and I just didn't think he was anywhere near there. So to me, that his drop might have been the most surprising of the night, even more than Bol Bol, which got a lot of attention. I wasn't shocked that Bol Bol fell so much because it really did seem like there were a lot of people around the league who just didn't like him. With Nasir Little, I didn't have that sense.
Yeah, and by the way, our mock draft from Rob Doster, our college basketball expert, had him at 14 going to Boston. I think that the teens were kind of where most of us expected him to go, not to fall all the way down to 25. That's a good pickup. By the way, I was praising the Cavs early. Dylan Windler could be a nice little pickup. At 26, that seems like a good late first-round pick. And we've ripped the Suns for some of their early picks. If they got one thing right tonight, I got a feeling like 24 Ty Jerome, backup point guard guy, that could be a good one. Look, I don't think he's a long-term starter, but I think teams seem to really like him, and I think I could see him as a kind of gritty backup guard who does stick in the NBA. We'll see if he can put it together, but like at 24, that seems like a good pick to me.
Yeah, I like that one too. I mean, it's real easy to kill the Suns because I think overall they had a bad night, but there is some chance for it to work out. I like that pick too. I also think with the TJ Warren trade, I wasn't as down on that as most people. I didn't exactly love it by any means. I think TJ Warren, he's going to put up his points. He's going to be a minus defensively, though. I'm not sure if I trust his shooting yet. It's been one season of good shooting where he fits better into a team construct. See how Phoenix uses that cap space that could salvage some of this. But yes, I'm with you. If there's one reason to have some optimism about the Suns, it's Ty Jerome.
Yeah.
At least from last night. I mean, the real reason to have optimism is Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, but obviously they were already in place.
Yeah. We get into the second round. There's the guys you can like at the top. I'll tell you, one guy at top of the second round I thought was a nice pickup and could be a good fit. I liked Kazi Okpala out of Stanford, the 6'10 forward. A late bloomer, but a guy I think can play, has the potential. Again, this is one of those, can he put the work together? But I think he can. And getting him at 32 in the second round, he just strikes me as a guy who could really fit in Miami.
Another player who I almost said for my answer about it's a good fit. Like, the Heat culture, that could be good for Okpala. He's got some tools. He just needs to become more consistent. The second round pick I really liked was Bol Bol for the Nuggets.
Yes.
I think there were even the people who were really down on Bol Bol.
And I was one of them. I'm not a Bol Bol guy, and I like this pick for them.
Yeah. Like, the people are like, yeah, he's the injuries and his attitude, and I just don't like him. Even then, like, well before the Nuggets picked, we're starting to say, man, this is, like, way too low. Teams need to be less afraid of risk. And by the middle of the second round, there is no risk. Bol Bol could not play a second in the NBA. He could just wash out. He's not a bust. There are no busts that deep in the draft.
No. That is actually, I think, a topic worth discussing a little bit. When you get to these picks, I mean, how many GM's jobs never feel secure. They always feel like they're running for it, unless you're with the Spurs right now, or Danny Ainge is pretty locked in. There's a handful of guys who, you know, aren't going anywhere. But that, and I think, look, Danny Ainge, we can discuss the mistakes they might have made with all those assets and what happened, but the fact that he could roll the dice on stuff and take risks was because of his security. Guys who, the average GM who doesn't feel that kind of security really will take the safe pick, right? It really will go, man, I don't know. We could roll the dice on this guy, but it's why somebody like our MVP to be Giannis falls all the way to 15, because they're like, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of questions. He's really raw. Do I want to take that risk? And there comes a point where the risk is worth the reward. But higher than that, GMs just weren't willing to do it because they knew they could get what they thought was a more sure thing.
I'm glad you made that distinction. What they thought was a more sure thing. Like, there are sure things. The draft is so unpredictable. People just get it wrong all the time trying to bank on sure things. Like, I look at one of the most interesting picks of the draft as Rui Hachimura going number 9. I had him number 25 on my board. And I know it could just be differing opinion, right? But the Wizards, they're being run by Tommy Shepard right now. The Wizards have basically said, well, he's running the team right now. There's, like, no assurances he's going to run it any longer than for now. Eventually, they could hire somebody else. Maybe they promote Tommy Shepard. Maybe there was some outside influence. I'm not saying I know anything, but you can just see the circumstances.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Of Rui being Japanese and courting that market. And maybe that had something to do with the pick. Or maybe Tommy Shepard thought, this is the guy who can help us most next season. And based on how the team does next season, that's my shot for getting the job. But when those types of elements come into play, you are just far more likely to get the pick wrong.
Yep, exactly. I agree. Anybody you liked late, like you said Bol Bol, who I think, you know, obviously you're in the mid-40s, you're pretty late. Anybody else that I thought, I mean, I'm not a huge, I kind of like Talen Horton Tucker to the Lakers at that point, because I kind of think that that's a good upside pick for them. At that, again, because it's a low-risk spot, I kind of like that for them. Same with a guy I saw a little of, Quandre Witherspoon, the shooting guard out of Mississippi State, a slashing combo guard, really. He can knock it down, has a jumper, likes contact. Look, a lot of questions about his decision-making and how he's going to develop, but that's a, I don't know, I feel safe saying if you land at the Spurs, you've got a chance to develop, and I think that's a good spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be able to go too late, because by the time I got to the mid-late first round while filling out my first round board, I really started to feel like, oh, this draft, this is getting rough. One player I think is interesting, I didn't have him in the first round like I had Bol Bol, like I also had Talen Horton Tucker, is from Arkansas, Daniel Gafford to the Bulls. I think Gafford was probably looking like a first round pick last year, went back to school, and then was just put in such a terrible role. They tried to have him as more of a post up player. That's not his game. He's a pick and roll diver, a rim runner. And so he's somebody I think could look way better at the next level, but he's also a center. I think there are real questions about drafting centers given how high the level of play at center is in the league now. It's like just very easy to get a solid center. Just the way the skill set works, they're, I don't want to say a dime a dozen because they're a little more valuable than that, but not so much more. And so, yeah, in the second round, you want to take a roll of the dice on Daniel Gafford. That's one I like just fine.
Yeah, I thought that was a good bet. And by the way, when I did the best players off the board, there was a lot of, I saw online, like, well, why didn't Taco Fall get drafted? Look, because he can't move. He just, in today's, he's kind of an old school, I want to plant him in the middle of the paint, block shot center. And he looked, by the way, like, made life for Zion a little difficult if you can plant him in the paint and let him block shots. But you can't do that in the NBA, right? Like, I'm going to just drag him out into a pick and roll. He doesn't move all that well. He can't just stand in there. The guys are more athletic and stronger. And it's just, I don't love the fit. Maybe he proves me wrong. I'm sure he gets a summer league invite. And you know, maybe he's got more to it than I thought. But, like, with centers, you better be mobile. You better be able to move around or it just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. I guess some credit to Taco Fall that we're even talking about him because he improved a lot just to get into the conversation.
Yes.
That was great by him, and it just wasn't enough. That's tough. And yes, that mobility at center, that's part of the reason I wasn't as high as many people on Goga Batadze, who the Pacers got at 18. You know, I still had him as a first-round grade. He's got some skill, but man, he cannot move on defense. It's you're going to have to play a certain style where you're planting him by the rim, and maybe that works at times. Maybe he develops an athleticism. That's another thing I think we discount. I'm a big believer that you can learn everything. You can even learn height, right? You can do stretches. You can get taller functionally by stretching more, by really being comfortable getting your arms all the way out. I think you can learn everything. You can learn athleticism. I think Draymond Green is the shining example of that. Somebody who just wasn't that athletic when he got to the NBA and then became pretty darn athletic by working at it. And so much of who these players are can change.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's always, look, I have a buddy out here in Long Beach. Our kids played softball and soccer together when they were little, and we've stayed friends. He's a scout for the A's. And man, that's what he struggles with, and baseball players, baseball teams struggle with. But I think this is true of the NFL draft. It's certainly true in the NBA draft, which is these guys are 19. These guys are young and 20 and 21. And how do I know how they're going to react to this like new environment and the temptations and opportunities that come with it? Are they really driven? Are they really going to put in the work? Or, you know, in baseball's case, as he likes to put it, hey, we just give a kid $500,000 signing bonus. It's mid-July, and he's in Peoria and bored with his minor league team. What happens? Like, it's a legitimate question, and that goes with the NBA. For the first year, they tend to be pretty good because it's summer league, and they're with the teams, and they're getting driven, but does this kid have the, do these players, do these men have the motivation to, hey, all right, I really struggled with X last year. I've got to get into this gym with this trainer and work on my weaknesses and get more athletic and, you know, whatever X, Y, and Z needs to be for me. If it's stretching out my 3-point shooting, then I'm going to take 1,000 threes a day. Like, are these guys going to put in that work or not? And I think that's the thing that's got to be hardest to judge.
Yes, and relatedly, age is such an important component of evaluating these players, and yep. I think NBA teams do a very good job of this, but I think a lot of fans don't. Where I look at somebody like Nasir Little and Cameron Johnson, let's say.
Yeah.
Is Cameron Johnson better right now than Nasir Little? Yeah, absolutely. He's also 4 years older. Like, imagine where Nasir Little's going to be in 4 years. And that's not easy to do. That's not easy to imagine. It takes a lot of projecting. That's hard to do. But that's got to be a big part of the question because you have that extra time to do all the things you said and develop.
Yeah, exactly. Were there any picks or other themes that we haven't touched on that you thought really kind of came through in this? Things that you were like, man, something you saw going on during this draft that you wanted to talk about?
I thought Kevin Porter Jr. at number 30 was an interesting pick. Like Bol Bol, he was somebody I had higher because of the upside, but also did not expect him to go very high. I'm not sure I expected him to fall quite that much. Yeah. He'll also be an interesting challenge for John Beilein, unlike Darius Garland and Dylan Windler, who I think will fit in. Beilein hasn't necessarily coached players like Kevin Porter Jr., but just the talent is there. He could be a star. He has that type of game that if it works out, he could just be a star. And to get him at number 30, cost him $5 million and 4 second-round picks, that's a lot. But there is an upside that could make it very worth it.
Yeah. I think isn't that the question about Beilein? I think it's less like, can he do X's and O's? And more, after a lifetime coaching in college, where, especially at the higher levels of college, you're the CEO of the program. You're the guy with the power. You have the hammer. Man, you go to the NBA, you do not have the hammer. You're like, as a coach, you know, unless you're Greg Popovich. Look, you don't have control over the players. You're not the most powerful. You're not more powerful than your best players, and even some of the middle guys, maybe. But you're not more powerful than your best players, and there's still a GM and owner. It's a different power dynamic, and some guys adapt to it, and some don't. And I think that's the question I have with Beilein, is how is he going to adapt to not having any kind of leverage over these players and having to kind of win them over to his side?
I think Beilein's challenge is going to be that he is two things. He is number one, and these are not in order. He is number one, somebody who can help these players develop and become better and win more and make more money. He is also number two, somebody who could probably be walked over a little bit as he comes to this new situation, and really be kind of a softer presence in a way that players could take advantage of. And the question is going to be, do the Cavaliers players see number one first or number two first? Because if they identify him as somebody they can push over, it's a really hard thing to get the team back. Yep. If they identify him as somebody who will help them, then they'll buy in and not rebel. And so that, to me, is his challenge. And I think the talent they added last night, the Cavs, makes it even higher stakes. Because I do think the Cavs did a good job with their draft, and now they've got to make it work. And over the long term, like, this is not a draft that's going to change the Cavaliers next season, I don't think. This is not a coaching hire that's going to change the Cavaliers next season, I don't think. But these are moves that have the team on the right track long term.
Yeah, exactly. Potentially. Look, exactly. To me, when you're where the Cavs are in your development process, you just go get the best player available, and they did that. Like you said, Garland is a weird, you know, doesn't necessarily fit with Sexton, but by far the highest upside guy available at five right there. So take the highest upside guy. You said, I like Porter. I like the picks they made just because those guys have upside. And right now, they need talent and lots of it. And, you know, they're going to be back in the lottery again next year, almost certainly. They've got to stockpile talent over the next few years and then see where it takes them.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. You gotta, and it's to come back to what we were talking about before. We keep talking about the Cavs maybe too much, but they had an interesting draft. They had the high end talent, and they also got multiple swings. That's a big thing to get multiple swings because it's so unpredictable.
Exactly. We're suddenly preaching the Sam Hinkie Bible, right? Which is, we're going to be terrible and stockpile picks and get as many high picks as we can because we know we're going to choose Jahlil Okafor, and we're going to miss. But if we keep swinging, we also get Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons because we keep taking swings. So I think as frustrating as that system was for the league and how it got portrayed, there was a lot of logic to that, man.
Don't hate the player, hate the game. Exactly. That's what it's set up to be.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want teams repeatedly losing like that. Change the system.
Exactly. All right, Dan, thanks for doing this. Thanks for breaking down the draft with me. We will be back next week as we get prepped for, you know, that long break. The NBA really so good at ramping up into free agency. We got a whole week. We'll be back next week to break down free agency. And you thought the draft was crazy, Dan. It gets weird starting June 30th, man.
So right now, as we're in, like, man, this draft was, like, kind of exhausting, right? It was long. You spent all this time thinking about who it's going to be, just even watching it. We're looking forward to free agency. Like, there's so much that can happen. The league's going to shake up. Like, we are on to, like, these new things.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you ready for the NBA's award show about the regular season
A few days? You know what? We totally forget about that. And I actually mentioned something to this NBA exec during the finals. Like, man, there's just no interest. They're hooked on doing that show, but they understand the timing is just nobody cares. Nobody cares by that point. And they can try to turn it into a fashion show and musical guests and all that, and star power. And who, I mean, is it time to revisit the Giannis versus Harden debate again for MVP, really?
Right. So when, I'm trying to remember who it was now, when the Suns traded TJ Warren, I was writing about it last night. I'm thinking, man, like, how does TJ Warren play? Like, what's his game like? Like, I haven't seen him play in months. The regular season ended so long ago, and it dawned on me like that. I mean, that's what these awards are, they're regular season awards. And it was just so long ago that I saw TJ Warren play. I really had to refresh myself.
Yep.
Nobody's going to be excited. The idea of an award show is just fine. The timing makes it not worth it in the slightest.
I mean, I'm a voter, and I will tell you that during the finals, somebody asked me about my vote for one of the awards, and I'm like, hold on a second. I got to go back and look it up. Like, it's so long ago. I don't remember who I had second team all defensive off the top of my head anymore, because it's that long ago. Like, I studied the heck out of it at the time, but you're right. Like, TJ Warren, you're like, I have some memory of that, but I've kind of got to go back and look at stuff to think about it for a second, because, yeah, you just don't know. I don't want to say don't know, but it's just, you've kind of mentally moved on to all these other projects.
And maybe this is something that everybody else already realizes, but I think it's important to note that it's not just the passage of time, it's that there's so much stuff that happened since to push everything back.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yes, you spend a lot of time evaluating who had the best defensive regular seasons. You also spend a ton of time evaluating, well, who's defending well in the playoffs, and how does that match up, and how does that work? And you've moved on in your defensive thought process to the next thing. It's hard to jump back to that previous point in time when there's been so much more to consider.
Yeah, exactly. And it's hard to kind of mentally go back there. And I don't think with MVP it's necessarily that way, but, you know, where do you put Kawhi Leonard in all NBA right now compared to where you put him at the end of the regular season when he played 60 games? Like, things change, man.
Yes, these awards are only for the regular season, to do it after so much more has happened. And also, again, at a time where everybody's excited about next season, about the draft and free agency, something's got to change. Or also, maybe something can change. Maybe the NBA can revise its calendar in some way, moving back the draft or moving up the turn of the calendar year. But all the confusion about, like, who's making which pick at which time because the trades aren't official yet, because the calendar hasn't turned over and teams can't make these trades official yet in so many circumstances, or because of the Stepien rule they can't make them official, that's not a good system either.
You know what? I know that I'm not the first person to say this, but there has been a push from some quarters to push the draft back to after the start of free agency, move the start of free agency up a little, put the draft after, so the teams have a better, like you said, it just kind of makes, like, this way the Hawks are making that pick at number four instead of the Lakers, who are going to, you know, the guy comes up, puts on a, you know, Hunter puts on a Lakers hat, and it looks silly, so... Yeah, there's a lot of push for that, and there's some logic to it, but it also means moving Summer League back and all this other stuff, and boy, it's not easy to move that calendar around. So,
I mean, the simpler thing is the reason there's this pause between the finals and the start of free agency and then the end of the moratorium is because the league needs to figure out its revenue so it can set the salary cap for the following year. Except this is 2019. It's so much simpler. It's not like they're poring over sheets and sheets of paper like they were years ago. This is all on a computer. You hit a button, you can come up with the salary cap. They could just make it so right now it is still the 2018-19 season. That doesn't change until they moved up a few hours. That won't change until June 30th. Well, that could have changed June 19th.
Yep.
I think that might be the way where you keep everything in place. It's just the league calendar turns over.
Yeah, that's very possible. Are you suggesting, though, because if you told me that they were still using an abacus in the NBA's accounting office, I would not be totally stunned. So we'll see.
No comment.
All right, Dan, thanks for doing this. Like I said, we'll be back next week to start breaking down free agency. And by the way, we might make a passing mention of the award show somewhere in there. Thanks again for doing this, Dan. We'll talk to everybody soon and be back with another Pro Basketball Talk podcast.
Save big money on your next project with help from Menards. Move water where you need it quickly with a Barracuda sump pump. Some pumps keep your basement dry when big storms hit unexpectedly. Get a half horsepower cast iron Barracuda sump pump on sale now through May 5th. Hurry into Menards. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.